Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Extended weekend for Marty Baron. That means we start in the bakery here to kick a fresh Chris Baker to start things off. Hi, Bakes. How's your cap situation here on July 28th?
My salary cap is always, I'd like to have a higher ceiling on my salary cap, but no, things are going well. Happy Monday. Nice to be with you here on this July 28th. Summer is moving a little too fast for my liking, Duffer, so hopefully we can kind of slow it down here starting today.
Well, Marty will be happy to know it's officially late July, and that gets him excited. He's on the links today where you've, I think, been a little bit of late. How's that treating you?
It's been a nice summer. My scorecards haven't been nice, but it's just nice to get out there, have fun. Did a little bit of that yesterday. Maybe we'll talk about that for best of the weekend later in the show.
Oh,
little sneak peek, Duffer. Little sneak peek.
With the eyebrow raise, which was not seen on WGR, Sports Radio 550, but let me tell you, it was there. You know, there was a little bit of a reason behind why I asked you about your cap situation. The Sabres have spent a little more over the course of the weekend. Connor Timmins, 2-year deal, $2.2 million per. He'll be playing for the first time as a Sabre this fall. The Sabres, as per Puckpedia this morning, currently stand 17th in money committed for next year. And they're within like $1 million to $1.5 million about a handful of teams. So let's just say middle for where they are with, you know, 23 contracts included in that. Obviously, Devon Levi still needs one, but it's not going to affect the number. They're not going to carry three goalies. And it remains to be seen whether they carry 14 forward, seven defense, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, it looks like they're pretty much done their spending. They're kind of in the middle. And it's been a weird summer for teams that were looking to spend. How do you view where Buffalo is at on the cap? All those teams behind them that don't really have a way of spending their remaining cap dollars at this point.
Yeah, I think they're coming into the season with some flexibility. Obviously, I think they're, you know, leaving some on the table. When you look at the teams that still have cap room with it going up next year, it's pretty wild because there's not like a lot of these teams are waiting to sign a big ticket RFA that they just haven't hammered out a deal with yet. There's a couple teams that have some maneuvering to do. You know, Marco Rossi needs to get done with Minnesota and so on. There's a couple other, you know, I think LaFerriere out in LA needs to get done. I think he's going to take up a chunk of what they have left. When I look at the Ducks, over $21 million left in space, and Mason McTavish not going to get all of it. So it's been a transition year with the cap going up. When I bring it back to the Sabres, I do think it's flexibility. Pretty much everyone's done. And I think that they've actually done some decent work. We could talk a little bit about Timmins. It's not really going to hurt you at 2.2. I think you're going to get that utility out of him. But what does it mean still if like a Brian Rust pops loose? You know, some of the writers, whether it's LeBron or some of the other guys that were tapped in, were thinking that this was going to be an offseason that was going to extend a little bit. You could see some activity post-arbitration that a couple other names could shake loose. And the Sabres would probably have to maneuver, though, to fit Rust in. But I'm still wondering, like, I think a layperson, we think they're done, but we don't know for sure. I think there's still a little fraction of potential that something else could break loose and the Sabres could be players in it. And they have a little bit of flexibility to make a move if they elect to do so.
Yeah, let's use Rust as a hypothetical, just in the ballpark of $5 million per. If you're bringing in a Rust, you're probably moving out someone like a Krebs at the very minimum. So you're looking at one of the, you know, kind of bottom five forwards that are in that 1.5 to 2 million range that could potentially be moved. So that pretty much takes care of it right there. They're not going to have to do, you know, too much, I wouldn't think, work-wise. But whenever you even broach the subject of a Rust, then it immediately impacts, in my opinion, Benson, Quinn, Doan, what is the trickle down here? If you actually hypothetically spend right up to the cap here, bringing in Rust or whomever before night one.
Hypothetical is that it's worth it for the experience that a Brian Rust would bring to you on the ice and in the dressing room. And Let the guys battle it out. The players will figure it out. They'll sort it out with the competition that happens in camp. One of the things I like about this season for the Sabres and for Lindy Ruff and his staff is that they actually have a training camp. They don't have to boogie early and go overseas. And that's like something that I think it's worth impressing upon the fan base coming into this season. I know it's Bills fever right now, but I'm wired hockey and I'm ready to get the season started because they're going to have the runway of a full camp. And, you know, you can say maybe maybe too long of a preseason schedule. This is the year that I'm glad they actually have the extra preseason games if they do bring a rust in and kind of figure it out. There is a trickle-down effect, but you could also insulate the top of your lineup by getting a player like that in, just letting these guys battle it out and let the players sort it out. I like the just like we were talking about cap flexibility, give Lindy Ruff some flexibility too. Mm-hmm. You know, adding a player like that who I think theoretically could play both sides. You need more help on the left side. I get it.
Yeah.
But play around with that too. But no, I mean, again, low probability, Duffer, I think. Mm-hmm. But worth talking about here as we, you know, look, I think the bottom line is, Duffer, with a rust, it's really, there's an element of danger going into the season with a Kulik and Benson maybe overplaced in your lineup. And that's why for me, it's still worth thinking about. Right.
That's maybe as, and I would, wild card is the wrong word because Josh Norris is clearly an NHL player and he's clearly capable of producing. That's why he was the biggest piece in that deal with Dylan Cousins. The salary shows us that, but we've not seen it. We've had three games to view Josh Norris. So yeah, I honestly still have a lot, like you said, when, cause you kind of launched in there with Yuri Kulik. I feel the same as you do there. Like I liked a lot of what Yuri did last season. It's also a pretty big expectation that, you know, you're going to get increased production from him, which you're going to need based on who he's likely to play with.
And my thought on rust too is it goes back. This isn't a move where Kevin Adams would just be amassing talent. Mm-hmm. I think it truly is building a team.
Okay.
And that's why I focus on the locker room and, like, you know, the addition of Josh Doan, what that's going to do to your locker room. If you read the piece that Matthew Fairburn wrote on The Athletic about Doan, he talked to some folks very close to him, Arizona State coach, Chicago Steel, people that were familiar with him. They speak to the character that the Sabres are getting. Keep adding to it because Doan is a very young player. Mm-hmm. Get an older version of that guy. So again, that's kind of where my head is at in this, you know, next, what, month and a half or so leading mm-hmm. up to camp. And it, along the way, to answer your question, it does protect you against overexposing a Yuri Kulik and Benson. And that's kind of, I think those players can do it. I think they're incredibly talented, both of those young players, Kulik mm-hmm. and Benson. But just in case, add that extra layer of experience. And I think it's really worth kicking the tire on.
Marty's not here to defend himself, but I think it's fair to say when I was pushing him on Doan a while back, he couldn't quite get to where I was at. Like in the sense of, I feel like, if everything Matthew wrote about Doan and the significance of the trade, i.e. Paterka going out the door, it's not just about Kesselring. Like this needs to be a two player for one player type situation that can come in yeah. and do something. Like I did never once when that trade went down, did I think, well, Doan's just going to be fourth line to start. Do I have to change my thinking? Like it's because I see him in the top nine somewhere, but I just don't know where.
It's hard. It's still hard to figure out. Like when the paint was still fresh on that trade, and I still had the post-it notes right next to my laptop here, you know, I had him out there with McLeod and it's either Quinn or Greenway and just try, because I think that's where he fits.
Yeah.
He's a middle six feel, the way that he can hunt pucks, the way that he can forecheck, and he does have more goals in his stick than he showed. This was a kid. He came out, he scored two goals in his first game.
Oh, he had a torrid start.
Adrenaline, right? Yeah. Yeah. Adrenaline, everything else, playing on the rink that he always played in. But I think to your point, there is more than meets the eye if you're just looking at his counting stats. With Doan being young, the character again, I think going to a new team, he's going to want to come in here and be just impress his teammates, win them over, work his tail off. So it's going to be, I'm excited. I'm really excited for this camp just because, you know, I think that he's going to open up a lot of eyes for fans that I think didn't really know who Josh Doan was as a player. They knew what they gave up in Paterka, but I think that he's going to impress a lot of people, and I think including the coaching staff, most importantly.
Impossible to know what they would roll out for lines when training camp starts. Doan Quinn Benson, who has the greater likelihood to jump higher up in the lineup when the season starts, based on this camp that you're talking about? Because honestly, I get it, and I like Jack Quinn, and we know the new contract, and we know what he's done, and we still, I think most people believe in the projections, the capability for Quinn. But to me, that does not guarantee him much at this point. If Doan came in and for whatever reason found chemistry with somebody, I would be willing to go with that. Same with Benson, who got the sample size that he earned last year as well. But and we haven't even got to the most often talked about top prospects in Rochester, who, again, to your point, are going to get a real camp this year, not a split camp where it was super cool for them to play all the NHL preseason games in North American buildings, but they didn't have a chance to compete with the actual Sabres.
Yeah, listen, man. That's another wrinkle. That's another layer of why this camp for me is really compelling. Mm-hmm. Are the young players. To go back to your question though about Quinn, I think that the Sabres would love, their brain trust would love it to be Quinn, because that means he came into camp. He's another year away from the Achilles surgery. It's strengthened up. He's quicker. He's got more explosion in his skating stride, and we know that he can score goals when he's going. And he didn't have that bad of an end of the season either, by the way.
Right.
The answer, I do believe, is Benson in that scenario, because of his, you know, the metrics, his underlying metrics. When he played with Thompson last year, were pretty, I think, significant. They pop out at you when you look at them. I think Tage likes playing with them. I think that works favorably in Benson's direction. In that question, as you pose it, that's my answer. But I think if Quinn pops, that's a great situation for the Sabres. I don't see Doan there yet because of the role. I love the concept of Doan and Greenway, opposite wings, going in on the forecheck into the corners and making things happen and pressuring those D. And some pucks can pop out where, whether it's the defenseman or the centerman, whoever's higher in the zone, makes things happen. Now, I can see it in my head, and I kind of like that thought. That's why I kind of want to reserve that workman-like effort that Doan can bring to that middle of the lineup.
Do you see any opportunity for standout camps and second thoughts from the hockey department as they finalize the roster for opening night when it comes to Austlin, Hellenius, and now the elder statesman of the group, Rosén, who has three full AHL seasons under his belt, all of which saw improvement?
We got a lot of bodies ahead of him. It's going to be very hard for one of those guys to get a crack, especially for the types of spots that might be available or not, more likely not available. I'm very interested in Rosén. We've heard Vinny Prospel mention how he's been maybe a little too, he wasn't as assertive as you would have liked him to have been when he's gotten his spots. He's got to come up and just go and take a job from someone. He's been a little more reserved, where maybe he came in, Rosén has, and wanted to just more blend in. If he comes in with a different mindset, we know he can play the game well. We know he's responsible. We know he's got a smart stick. He can shoot that puck when given a little bit of space to get it off. Hellenius is a guy that I'm really excited for because I think he's got the attitude. He's got the frame. I think he's like that. He's got that mindset where he just doesn't care. He is the guy that would be assertive, but he's still pretty young. You know, he just turned 19. It's pretty wild, right? So I think to answer your question there, it's hard to see one of those three popping. Rosén, to me, is the guy that I think has to take the bull by the horns and come in and just own it and just have a mindset that he's going to go out and win a job. It's the only way it's going to happen for him.
And you want Austlin to just be the number one guy in Rochester, hopefully without the 21-game absence due to injury that felled him at the start of last year, but also at the same time motivated him and allowed him to come back as one of the hottest regular season players in the American Hockey League for the second half. Is that how you view Austlin? Because, look, I don't have any formula at this point. or real comps among the group of, let's say, Danforth, Krebs, Kozak, Ostlund, when it comes to hockey intelligence. But I'm giving it away by saying I don't think any of those, like of those four, I don't think any of them are smarter than Ostlund when it comes to playing the game.
No, I think for me, my position with Ostlund is it's more of an injury recall when the inevitable, I mean, it's hockey, right? Like, so whether it's one of those centermen, it could be a winger also. I think that that's part of the flexibility that they have this year. But for me, it's an injury recall. Maybe it's around Thanksgiving, maybe, you know, right around that time, something usually happens. And he'll have a little bit of momentum in theory coming up great, to your point. Great finish to the year down in Rochester, really got it going. If he can start that year again, look, he can create upward pressure and force his way up, just like he did last year. But I do think he's that guy waiting in the wings to plug and play when the inevitable injury happens to the forwards.
We can definitely go through a little bit, and it's like a lot of things we do in the summer. It's a bit of a refresher, and especially when it comes to the American Hockey League, you don't quite see and add all the pieces up as they go because they're not the priority signings, if you will, within the organization. But just trying to put it in a little bit of depth chart form as we go on, because there's a handful of players that we got used to hearing their names in Rochester that are unlikely to be part of the equation this year. But I am really, obviously here with Chris Baker at Sabres Prospects. The news over the weekend was Connor Timmins avoiding arbitration, 2-year deal, $2.2 million per. We've been talking about it in the context of where that has left Buffalo from a salary cap standpoint. They've got about 5.1 to spend if they were still, eyeing the marketplace to bring in somebody that would command a salary like that, and obviously would then come into a higher spot in the lineup. They're basically middle of the NHL right now as far as money spent for this upcoming season. There's not a lot of dominoes to fall for a lot of teams. Chris laid out some of the prominent restricted free agents that teams are likely to get business done with and retain or not. One of the first things you mentioned, Bakes, was Anaheim. And yeah, we've all fixated on them all summer because of the massive amount of money they had to spend. They brought in Kreider. They signed Granlund, and they still have a bleep ton of money left over. So, like, what do you think is going to happen with McTavish here? Is he just going to really, really, like, look at all this money? Do you guys want me to be the guy? Is he going to remain in trade rumors? Is he someone you should pursue? What do you think of Mason McTavish?
Doesn't it feel like Boston could just be lurking there? Now,
Oh,
that's a team, though. They only
yeah,
have,
but
they only,
Boston's
they,
lurking
well,
because Eichel next year, if he doesn't get his
well, they
extension
are. And
out.
they only have about 2 million in space, also. So they would have to do some maneuvering there as well. But doesn't he always just, like, McTavish just feels like that type of player? And there's only a handful of teams that have the draft pick capital for an offer sheet, because I think that's kind of where you're going here, right? Now,
Or trade, like, I mean, yeah,
yeah.
but
It's
yeah.
tricky though. Like, I think at some point, like, when were the offer sheets last year, the two in St. Louis? It was right around now, wasn't it? Like
I
August?
think
It was
so,
pretty late
yeah.
into the season. I think that shoe could drop potentially, but there's not a lot of teams that can make it happen. And Verbeek's got a ton of cap space. I just don't see the resolution being Mason McTavish plays for a different team. But, you know, I for some reason, you always think about the Bruins. It's like, you know, he's that type of player, that traditional heavy style that we always come to think about when you hear the Boston Bruins brand pop into your brain.
Haven't they done that 6 times already this summer?
True. I know. They got their big ticket with what, Tanner Janot. But no, I that's going to be an interesting one. But no, there's so many other teams, though, you know, and to kind of flip the script, though, Duffer, when you look, like, there's a couple teams that are over the cap, too. So let's not pretend that, you know, it's, but some of them are, you know, whether it's Vegas with Pietrangelo, they could take him off and solve that. Carey Price is still on the books. You take his 10 and a half off, and Montreal's fine. The one team that I look at, and I'm kind of curious to see what happens here, is Jersey. They have to get Luke Hughes done. He's the other RFA, like, at the top of that list that we haven't mentioned yet. And they only have about 6 million in change, and I'm pretty sure, I'm not a capologist by any means, but I'm certain that Luke Hughes is going to get more than what they have in their kitty. So they have to do some maneuvering too. Kind of like what we talked about. If the Sabres did hypothetically go out and get a Brian Ross, they got to make a move. Got to subtract something that you currently have on your books. What's Jersey going to do? Right? Okay. There's a lot there. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to Jersey, people have, you know, and he's got a little bit of control in the situation, obviously. But if they moved Hamilton, that would then open the door to give Hughes whatever they want to give him. And they've already made some smaller offseason acquisitions up front. But who would you rather have, Brian Rust or Dawson Mercer?
I'm looking at the value to the room. And I know, listen, I think that obviously Dawson Mercer fits into your timeline with all these young players. But I, when I look at the Buffalo Sabres still being one of the youngest teams in the league, I want that experience. I want the guy that's been there and done that. He's got his cups. Come into that room. It's all about the attitude, the work ethic. It's that's really why I've been focused on him. I mean, this news came out before the trade deadline that Kyle Dubas was potentially interested in some of the Buffalo Sabres' younger players or more developed prospects. At that time, all roads led to Brian Rust. For me, had a great season. I know there's injury issues that you got to budget for with him by the style of play and everything else. I don't care. It's the value to the room. It's that leadership. Need more of that here. It's that's where how I'm answering that question. And I and listen, Dawson Mercer, heck of a player. Would fit really well. And he's only $4 million, I think.
Right. But coming off of, you know, a challenging year. And that was part of why the fixation from the media and fans, presumably in Jersey, happened when, you know, they lost Hughes and they, even before that, it just, Mercer never got quite to the level this year. So then that kind of exacerbated some of their scoring challenges,
and,
you know.
And when, who was his coach when Paul Cotter was playing elevated?
When Paul Cotter dried up, you know.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Dawson Mercer was not there to rescue them.
Who was on the bench when Dawson Mercer was playing an elevated level of hockey?
I don't know. Who was it?
I don't know. It might have been Lindy.
You know, when it comes to the most simple math, I really, really, really struggle.
It might have been Lindy. Yeah, so... That's another wrinkle there in your question, I guess, to throw out there. But my answer doesn't change. It's still Brian Rust.
Okay. But did any of your thinking change, or did you end up with more questions than answers when Buffalo signed Danforth, which then makes the bottom of the forward group have a realistic challenge between Danforth, Krebs, Kozak, Doan, Malenstein, and who knows, maybe somebody from Rochester, you know, muddying those waters. Like, what did you think when that happened?
I don't think that Danforth is brought in to be an extra forward. That's for sure. And I think that that whole thought was cemented after watching the most recent embedded that came out as well. I think it's pretty clear that they have designs on him being in the lineup on opening night. So no, it just goes back to that competition. There's a body. There's clearly a spare part. I think there's an NHL contract that's going to go through waivers, could land in Rochester. I think it's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about the obvious ones like a Zach Jones or someone like that, or maybe even a Bryson. Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. But no, I think it's that competition. But it's also that that fourth line is going to look a little different. They may not be as physical as maybe they had intended to when they brought in that trio of Malenstein, Lafferty, and Obey Kubel. But I think the tenacity, I think the just grittiness to go to the front of the net and be a little bit more chaotic and just have that tenacity, I think that's what you're going to see there. So, no, I mean, I think it's tricky. That's where, to your earlier point, if there's another deal to be made before training camp where they use up some of that $5-plus million, it's coming. I think it's a body and futures prospect that's coming out of there. Could be Krebs. It's one of those that goes and Krebs is likely, I think, a likely one for me. And I go back to Ryan Johnson. I know he's got the 2-year deal. He would be an attractive one also to facilitate a deal with a team like Pittsburgh, I think. Right. I don't want to move off him, but again, bodies. You have a lot of bodies.
I would agree. And do you see Danforth then more as a center? I know he's versatile enough for both. And well, we also saw Kozak last year. He would have to go through waivers. Do you see Danforth more as the middle guy or not?
I like him better as a winger.
Yeah.
based on my knowledge of his game, and I've seen him quite a bit. I like him better as a winger, but I like the fact that he is versatile. I do like the fact that he can play down the middle. It's just a preference. It's just a preference, you know, and that's where, but same thing with Krebs. You can go both ways with him. Play the middle, play the wing in that role. But no, I would give the edge right now coming into camp. I mean, Krebs is kind of where he was last year. He's got to fight to win that job.
He has to, and yet all of this talk that we've, taken here for the first half hour of the week, there's no real foundation to be able to just add one of these newcomers and then slot everybody else where they were, because Norris didn't play. Greenway was out due to injury. Like, just those two players alone makes like, we don't know. We can't sit here and say, well, they are this when Norris is healthy and Greenway's impacting a third line. We don't know that with this configuration of players.
Norris unlocks everything. He's the biggest storyline, I think, for me coming into training camp. And Greenway, we do know. When Greenway came back in the lineup, when he was hurt in the middle of the season, came back in, noticed him right away. You know what you have with him. I get excited thinking about him in the middle of the lineup. I really do. And I can't put a $4 million player on the fourth line. I'm unwilling to do that. You know, like if they go out, like he's the one guy that you don't push down. You know, there's problems that happen if they make another deal, and you got to avoid making a problem with him. But no, Norris, to answer the question, he's for me that most compelling storyline. We saw just a glimpse, but not enough to know is it Kulik or Norris that plays with Tage and maybe and presumably Benson. That's kind of
Well,
where my head's at.
you felt the energy from Chris Baker so far. It's because he, like the rest of us, is getting ready for everything to ramp up in early September. We have Sabres Fan Fest presented by Coca-Cola Zero Sugar. Happens on September 13th. It's all part of really a kind of a kickoff weekend in the sense that we have Prospects Challenge happening at the same time. As far as Fan Fest is concerned, you got player appearances, games, activities, ton of great things that we've seen over the last number of years. Hockey Fest, the street hockey tournament's a part of it as well. Sabres.com/FanFest for all the info on that and more from Chris Baker as we continue here on day one of a new week on Sabres Live.